ですけど。あれ。Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Badadhari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Shri Srimad's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Bibli Founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravajikacharya Stotirasata Shri Srimad's Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shlahadidas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gopadan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Ganga Jamunamai ki jai, Tulasi Devi Maharani ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Brinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru Angadanga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 14, text 18. Sarva Shraman Upadaya. Sarva Shraman Upadaya. Swashramena Kalatravan Swashramena Kalatravan Vyasana Navam Atyeti Vyasanar Navam Atyeti Jalayanar Yatar Navam Jalayanar yatar navam Sarvashraman upadaya Swasramena kalatravan Vyasanar navam artyeti Jalayanar yatar navam
So
Vaishnavis. Sarva, all, ashraman, social orders, upadaya, completing, swa, own, ashramena, by the social orders, kalatravan, a person living with a wife, vyasana arnavam, the dangerous ocean of material existence. Atyeti, one can cross over. Jalayanai, with sea-going vessels. Yata, as. Arnavam, the ocean. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As one can cross over the ocean with sea-going vessels, one can cross the dangerous situation of the material ocean by living with a wife. Purport. That was Kashyapa Muni speaking. Purport. There are four social orders for cooperation in the endeavor for liberation from material existence. The orders of brahmacharya, or pious student life, household life with a wife, retired life and renounced life all depend for successful advancement on the householder who lives with a wife. This cooperation is essential for the proper functioning of the institution of the four social orders and four spiritual orders of life. The Varnashram system is generally known as the caste system. The man who lives with a wife has a great responsibility in maintaining the members of the other social orders, the brahmacharis, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. Except for the grihastas or the householders, everyone is supposed to engage in spiritual advancement of life. And therefore, the brahmachari, the vanaprasta, the sannyasis, have very little time to earn a livelihood. They therefore collect alms from the grihastas, and thus they secure the bare necessities of life and cultivate spiritual understanding. By helping the other three sections of society cultivate spiritual values, the householder also makes advancement in spiritual life. Ultimately, every member of society automatically becomes spiritually advanced and easily crosses the ocean of nations. Omagana timiranda shajananjana shalakaya chakshur umilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So this is Kashyapa Muni speaking. And we heard previously, two verses ago, that he's not in the best consciousness. Prabhupada said in the purport to number 16, text 16, he said that Kashyapa Muni was already inclined to have sexual enjoyment with his wife, and because he was not a strong man, he tried to dissuade her only with pacifying words. So he's in a bit of illusion at this point, Kashyapa Muni. But nevertheless, what he's saying is correct. I mean, it is correct that if one is in the Grihastha Ashram, as stated here, and does it properly, then that will enable one to cross the dangerous situation of the material ocean, you know, cross over the ocean of nations. So he's right about that. But, unfortunately, he's just giving it lip service at this point. He's really just giving that lip service. In other words, he's not doing it. It's ironic because here he is, he's saying how, yeah, if you, you know, follow the Grihastha Ashram, it's very important. You'll cross over the ocean of material existence. And he's not following the Grihastha Ashram by what he's doing, right? The proper execution of Grihastha Ashram is you have to, one thing for sure, you have to observe as many things you have to do. One thing is pointed out here, you have to, it's very responsible, you have to maintain the members of the other social orders. That's there. That's one duty or responsibility of somebody in the Grihastha Ashram. Another one is you have to observe Garbhadhan Samskar. So he's, you know, it's about as far as from Garbhadhan Samskar as you could get, what he's doing, you see. So it's kind of, as I said, he's just giving lip service to this, and it's ironic because he's behaving exactly in the opposite way. Prabhupada, I was listening to a lecture last night or the night before, Prabhupada was describing that in the proper Vedic culture, when, you know, Van Ashram was operating properly, that Garbhadhan Samskar was a ceremony, just like a marriage ceremony. And just like, you know, everybody's been to a marriage ceremony, right? It's quite an elaborate ceremony. And then you have, you know, the marriage of the relatives are there. There's a priest there or somebody, you know, some religious person officiating. And, it's, you know, it's a serious thing that people take vows in front of the fire. So Garbhadhan Samskar in traditional Vedic culture was a similar sort of a ceremony. It was a big affair. It wasn't just some sort of like, you know, people, they're married now, whatever they do, they do. No, it wasn't like that. This was like another ceremony, when the especially if you're in the Brahmin order, Brahmin caste, or Brahmin varna. Brahmins, especially because Brahmins would be exemplifying ideal human life as far as possible. So when a Brahmin was going to conceive, once again, you know, there'd be invitations sent out to other Brahmins, friends, relatives. They would all come there. There'd be a ceremony. You know, this Brahmin is going to try to conceive with his wife. It's like a marriage ceremony. So that's what's supposed to happen. And that if that was a, that's proper, ideal human life and proper. And if that's not done, then according on the same lecture, Prabhupada was saying if somebody doesn't do that, if they don't observe the Garbhadhan Samskar, he said immediately they're a Sudra. There's no question of Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya. He said, if you don't observe Garbhadhan Samskar, you're a Sudra. Or lower, depending upon how much you deviate from that. So basically, I mean, one thing we get from that is that people today, the general, the human population in the world today are pretty much Vana Samskar. Vana Samskar means unwanted population. Unwanted population. Because not only are people... Sorry? Vana Shankara, sorry. Thank you. Vana Shankara. Yeah, unwanted population. Because not only are people having sex life at the wrong time, but they're having sex life with the wrong people, in the sense that they're not married. So people are not only having sex life at the wrong time when they're married, but they're having sex life with people they're not even married to. So it's totally in the mode of ignorance. And that, you know, disqualifies one from being a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, even a Sudra. You're lucky if you're, you know, if you, when you're breaking principles to that extent, that frequently, you're lucky if you're, could be considered, because the Sudra is still considered within the Van Ashram. But whereas you have, there's other races that are outside Van Ashram, Panchamas. You know, there's fifth class, Sudras are considered fourth class men, but there's fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth. You hear Prabhupada refer to them. So, yeah, you know, to the degree that people don't observe these regulative principles, then they go lower and lower and lower and lower. Even, you know, they're still in human bodies, but you're outside the Vedic system. You're outside the Van Ashram culture. So, yeah, so I'm going to read the reference to that, that this is from a lecture Prabhupada gave in Mumbai, about April 1971. He says, when there is sex life, there is a ceremony. It is not a secret thing. They could call, especially for the Brahmins, they would call friends. I'm reading it verbatim, just exactly how Prabhupada said it. Okay. They could call friends, just like Hindu marriage takes place not by agreement, but amongst, and he says, in the presence of Agni and friends and relatives and Brahmins, that is sufficient witness. Similarly, when a Brahmin goes to have sex intercourse for begetting child, there is a big ceremony. All the relatives, all the learned Brahmins are present, and with their permission, he goes for sex life. What a contrast, huh? To, you know, what goes on in the world today. Stark contrast. Then Prabhupada goes on to say, says, those who are not following the principles how to beget child or not observing the Garbhadhan Samskar, according to Shastra, immediately the family becomes converted into Sudra. No more Brahmin, no more Kshatriya, if he does not follow. This is very easy to understand. If you do something illegally against the law, immediately you become a criminal. Similarly, Dharma Viruddha, the Garbhadhan Samskara, has to be observed. Otherwise, we become Sudra. No more Brahmin, no more Kshatriya. So it is very difficult to say at the present moment whether Garbhadhan Samskara is observed. At least in Garbhadhan Samskara, we understand that this child is born of a real Brahmin. But without Garbhadhan Samskara, who knows how the child is born? Nobody knows except the mother. Therefore, the Shastra says, in this age, Kali Yuga, because this Garbhadhan Samskara is not observed regularly, Kalo Sudra Sambhava. Everybody in this Kali Yuga is a Sudra because the Garbhadhan Samskara is not observed. So that's what I was referring to. Yes, well, you know, and the Varnashram system, there's four castes, or there's four Varnas, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. So Sudra is like the laborer class, and they're predominantly influenced by the mode of ignorance. So, okay, well, you're moving further away from Krishna. Well, you're moving further away from Krishna. The more you deviate from the Dharma Viruddha, you know, the religious principles, you're moving further and further away from Krishna. You're not coming closer to Krishna. You're moving further away from Krishna. So the Brahmins are the Varna that's the closest to Krishna. Then the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. So if you don't observe, if you're in the Brahmin of Kshatriya Varna and you don't observe this Garbhadhan Samskara, anybody doesn't, they're in the mode, they're contacting the mode of ignorance, and that's going to be disadvantageous to them progressing or advancing, using their human form of life for what it's meant to be used for, which is to get closer to Krishna. The word Iso, we have this Isopanishad, you know, I was going to refer to this later in the class. Actually, the Isopanishad means that knowledge that brings one nearer to the Supreme Person, Krishna. So the whole idea is to, you know, conduct your life in such a way that you're going nearer to the Supreme Person, Krishna, not further away. And that's done by following these rules and regulations. You have to, one of them being Garbhadhan Samskara. See? It's just like, to give you a crude example, you know, how we become implicated. When I was in Australia, for a couple of years, the type of sankirtan we were doing, we were selling candles at Devotees Made and door to door. And sometimes we would go pub to pub. Okay, a pub is a bar, okay, if you don't know. And in Australia, it's quite a common thing. You have to, you know, guys get off work, they go to the pub and they sit around and they drink and they watch the sports, you know, on TV and they, you know, smoke. Okay, that's so when you went into the bar, a lot of times, at least to start off with, I was wearing a sweater, okay? And, you know, we would go and table to table, showing people the candles, trying to sell them. And because everybody's smoking in there, the sweater becomes, like, full of the smoke. And when you come out, it's kind of like it's thinking with this smoke. And I can't even remember when I put it through the hot wash with soap, if it even came out. Definitely, if you didn't do that, it didn't come out. So the point is, when you engage in sinful activities, you take on a certain quality. It like reduces your capacity. You know, aside from the fact that there's a reaction, but in general, it reduces your capacity to appreciate spiritual life. In that sense, you're moving into darkness. You're not moving into light. Okay? So that's why it's not a good idea to not follow these rules and regulations. But getting back to the points here. Okay, so now in the purport here, Prabhupada's talking about these four social orders and, you know, the Vanashram system. He does refer to it as such, the Vanashram. In the purport, it says, the Vedic Vanashram system is generally known as the caste system. So, Vanashram system is no longer functioning. It's no longer functioning. At least not perfect. Well, it's no longer functioning pretty much altogether. And, you know, devotees are very fond of, you know, mentioning that, well, Prabhupada, right towards the end of his life, he said, you know, only 50% of my work is finished. And the devotees asked him, well, Prabhupada, what do you mean? And he said, well, I want to establish Vanashram. And that's good, you know, but there's more to the conversation. The conversation went on. And they asked, Prabhupada, is that in just in general, or do you have some specific plan? And Prabhupada said, specific plan. And they asked him, what is that? And he said, I want to go to Gita Nagari, sit down, and teach you how to live off the land. So that was what Prabhupada said. See, because Vanashram is more than just, you know, that. Vanashram means establishing Brahman, you know, the four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. But apparently Prabhupada, at least when he was made that comment, he was mostly concerned with that aspect of it. That, you know, perhaps he was feeling that the devotees were not doing that great living in the cities, and he thought it'd be helpful for them to live in a rural environment and grow their own food, and etc. Anyway, so that's a point. So, but in general, and even within ISKCON, there's been, we're improving, you know, actually we have some farm communities where that's happening, where devotees are learning gradually or have learned how to grow their own food and be self-sufficient. So that's there. But on the whole, we're not like a perfect Vanashram system. But that's okay. That's okay. Because the real point is this, what's mentioned in the last sentence of the purport. Prabhupada says, ultimately, every member of society has to become spiritually advanced, and then they'll easily cross over the ocean of nations. See, so Vanashram Dharma is one system for achieving that end. The end being that people become spiritually advanced so they can easily cross the ocean of nations. So, you know, we're doing that. We're adopting some principles of Vanashram. We're not able to follow it perfectly, but, you know, we're doing it to the best of our ability. And there's other things that we're doing, but on the whole, we're organized in such a way as the members are a facilitator and able to become spiritually advanced and easily cross over the ocean of nations. And to be honest with you, this temple is an example of that. This temple is, we're not like a perfect Vanashram community, but we're doing what's necessary. We're doing the essential, which is that we're organized in such a way that things are focused on practicing Krishna consciousness and spreading it, getting it out there to other people. You know, we have, businesses that are preaching in and of themselves and also support book distribution. So this is an example. You know, Vanashram. I don't know how you refer to it, Daivi Vanashram or whatever. It's a sort of a hybrid of the classical Vanashram and Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement. But the bottom line is that what's supposed to happen is happening. There's an opportunity here for people to come and participate in become spiritually advanced themselves and push on the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada said in one purport in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, on this point, he says, Kriyashu means by manual labor, by work. It is important in this verse. One should engage in practical service to the Lord. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all our activities are concentrated. This is the point, practical service to the Lord. We might not be able to follow the Vanashram system exactly. We're not. We're not able to do that. But it's okay. But what has to happen is you have to be engaged, have an opportunity and be engaged in practical service to the Lord. So Prabhupada goes on, It says, in our Krishna conscious movement, all our activities are concentrated upon distributing Krishna literature. This is very important. One may approach any person to induce him to read Krishna literature so that in the future he may become a devotee. Okay, so the point is that, yeah, Prabhupada's saying it, and we're doing that here. You know, it's not like, but it's a team effort. It's a team effort. You know, there's people who actually go out and distribute the books, concentrating on, distributing Krishna literature. But we're supported. You know, we're supported by pujaris who are doing such a wonderful job, you know, addressing the deities, serving the deities, and it's very, you know, it's enlivening by cooks who are preparing prasadam, by managers who have arranged spiritual / preaching businesses, that support book distribution. So we're, it's like a Daivi Vanashram in the sense that the ultimate objective is being accomplished, it's being achieved, which is that members of the society are being given the opportunity and are taking advantage of it and are becoming spiritually advanced. That's what's going on. So that's important. And in order for that to happen, in a communal level, it has to happen for each one of us on an individual level. And I mentioned how I was going to, I don't know how exactly I got into it, but I think I was just chanting my japa, and for some reason the thought entered my mind that I should get Isopanishad, and I remembered there was some mantra in Isopanishad that was I needed to read. And I think Krishna was just guiding me, and I just went to the last mantra, you know. And sure enough, that was what I was looking for. The last four mantras of Isopanishad. By the way, this is a very important book, Isopanishad. Very important book. It's actually, I think you could say, more basic even than Bhagavad Gita. You know, Prabhupada would refer to Bhagavad Gita as like the ABC. I don't know. Isopanishad is even more basic, but it's important. And I'll tell you why I say that. Because Prabhupada, when he was here in Los Angeles in 1970, gave classes on the Isopanishad for one straight month. And what he did was every morning he had the devotees chant some mantras, you know, like sometimes the whole Isopanishad, but sometimes just like five or six mantras, and then he'd give a class on one particular verse, and he worked his way right through the Isopanishad. That was way back in the early days. And so obviously Prabhupada thought it was an important book. So the last four, there's 18 mantras in the Isopanishad. The last four are prayers, and this is the last prayer. And this is mantra 18, and this is which is the last mantra. And this is a prayer. I don't know the author is obviously Srila Vyasa, but who exactly is speaking this prayer? But it's very very important. It goes, Agne Naya Supata Raye Asman Vishvani Deva Vayunani Vidvan Yuyod Hi Asmaj Juhuranam Eno Buyistam Te Nama Uktim Videma. And the translation is, O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from reactions to my past sins so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. And so, as I said, I just felt like I was just kind of directed to this mantra. And when I read it, I thought, wow, I can really relate to this prayer, you know, that's being offered here by some devotee in the Isopanishad. You know, particularly this point of, please lead me on the right path to you. We should, devotee has to have that desire. We have to be desiring that. We have to be praying to Krishna, please lead me on the right path to you. And also, there's two requests here that are being expressed by the devotee who's offering this prayer. One is that one, that please lead me on the right path to you. And the other is that please free me from the reactions to my past sins so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. You see? So if individually we're cultivating this type of mentality, we're praying like this, then, you know, it's going to be successful. I mean, that's going to help us in our spiritual life, and we're going to be able to participate in the community in such a way that, you know, as it says here, that every member will become spiritually advanced and will easily cross over the ocean of nations. So this is an important thing. And interestingly enough, in the purport, Prabhupada, in elaborating upon this, Prabhupada refers to Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 17 through 21, which start off with Srinvatam, Svakata, Krishna, those famous verses. Prabhupada actually quotes them in the purport to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 1. I'm not going to quote them now. But I found that interesting because, you know, Prabhupada was sort of referring to that as being the process for achieving what this devotee is praying for. You know, then getting absorbed in the hearing and chanting about Krishna. And he doesn't talk about Vanashram. He talks about this, you know, process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And so that's what's, you know, that's our program. That's our program. We have to desire like this. We have to desire, Krishna, please lead me on the right path to you. You know, please free me from reactions to my past sins so that there won't be any impediment to my, you know, going there. And Prabhupada, in the purport, he explains what the process is. The process is the hearing and chanting about Krishna, what we're doing here every day. You know, we're from 4:30 in the morning, officially from 4:30 in the morning till 8:30 in the morning. We're, you know, 4 hours of hearing and chanting, and then, you know, more throughout the day. If we do this, then, and we stick with it, then eventually, here's what's going to happen. This is from the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's a description of what eventually happens to a devotee who is very, you know, sincere and dedicates themselves to this program. Prabhupada says, the pure devotee is 100% engaged in Krishna's service, and the Lord puts him in trance by which he can realize everything. He puts him in trance by which he can realize everything. Because to the sincere devotee of the Lord reveals himself, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. The Lord being the Lord of intelligence in everyone, even the non-devotee, Prabhupada says, favors his devotee with proper intelligence so that automatically the pure devotee is enlightened with the factual truth about the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is revealed not by one's speculative power or by one's verbal jugglery over the absolute truth. Rather, he reveals himself to a devotee when he is fully satisfied by the devotee's service attitude. Okay, so that's it. If we're just sincere about doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing here, then eventually this is what's going to happen. Krishna's going to reveal himself to us who are being fully satisfied by our sincere service attitude. And Prabhupada, in the next verse, he kind of emphasizes this point even more. He refers to this as the awakening of knowledge. And he says about this awakening of knowledge, he says, this awakening of knowledge is under the full control of the Lord. So in other words, there's no other process, there's no other program for understanding Krishna. Krishna has to reveal himself to you, and he's going to reveal himself to you, or us, to me as well, when he's satisfied, as it says here, when he's satisfied by our service attitude. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? Archie?
Thanks for a really nice class, Prabhu. Thank you very much. Maharaj's question in the middle of your presentation about the definition of a sutra. So this is given in the 18th chapter. And yes, we should know them. Beginning with 42, 1842 describes the Brahmana, Shamoda Maktamasto, like that. And then 43 describes the Chachya, Choryam Teja Driti Daksha. Then 44 defines both the Vaishya and the Shudra. Famous verse, Krishi Goraksha Vanijam. That's the Vaishya, cow protection, farming and business. And then the third line, Paricharyatmarkam, karma, Shudrasyapi, Sabhavajam. So what is it? Paricharya means service. Karmya means by means of, consisting of. So that's what a Shudra does. A Shudra is a person who serves others. The Brahmanas are very proud of not serving others. they, you know, make their own way in life, and similarly to the Kshatriyas. But as you pointed out in the beginning of your class, they may be proud of that, that they're not serving others, but if they don't observe Garbhadhan Sanskar, then they're immediately considered Shudras. They may be, you know, functioning externally as a Brahmana, lighting fires and throwing water and this and that, but if they have not observed Garbhadhan Sanskar, then they're immediately classified as Shudras. Which means, again, Shudra means Paracharyamakam Karma. You're serving others for your living. That's what a Shudra is, a person who serves others for their living. It's not about being evil or this or that. It's that you serve others. A Brahmana is never supposed to take service. If they can't live as a Brahmana, make a living, then they are allowed to come down and be a Kshatriya. Which means, again, you have to be bold in battle and you're allowed to tax like that. That's a Kshatriya's living. So we have the example of Dronacharya. He was a Brahmana by nature and by training, but he came down to the next level, the Kshatriya level, to train the royal princes how to fight, etc., etc. So he was making his living that way, not directly as a Brahmana. But a Brahmana or a Kshatriya or even a Vaishya should never take service from others for pay, directly or indirectly. That's what a Shudra is. So if you have that mentality, I go to school, I get a degree, and I'm very proud of having a PhD or whatever, but my real business is going door to door, knocking, please employ me properly. Say, that's the dog's business. Please employ me, feed me. That's dog. So that's why the Shudras are in the fourth class, because they have to depend on the higher three classes.
Got it. Thank you. Nice clarification. Vibhajanath? Oh, question or comment?
No, I just wanted to elaborate the point that I asked you to elaborate on. That was on the words Shudra. It's only a word, and to persons who don't know exactly what it really means in terms of activity, in terms of interaction, then it's only a word. So what I was trying to bring out is that when Prabhupada is mentioning the word Shudra, he's mentioning this is a whole different style of life. What one is concerned more with the satisfaction of his senses, of his ego, of his mind, of just his little body. He's concerned totally with that. But the main thing is he becomes gradually attracted to and addicted to various kinds of sense gratification, so that they take up so much of his time that he has no time for philosophical or spiritual activity. And that can happen, as we see in the story of Ajamil. Ajamil was a perfect Brahmin at one point, but then he got involved with this prostitute, and as a result of that involvement, he became more and more attached to her, more attracted to her, more interested in her, and to such an extent that he couldn't leave her. And even when he was at his very old age, he was still thinking in those terms. He couldn't get rid. So the point is this, is a Shudra is a person who can't think of anything except his sense pleasure. That's all he wants. Me, me, me. I. Where can I get my next fix? That's their idea. Whereas a devotee is thinking, where can I get my next opportunity to serve, to love, to adore, to give to Krishna? Basically, that's the difference. So you go from that high position of giving, adoring, surrendering to the other, to wanting everything for oneself and forget everybody else. That's it. That's all I want.
Vibhajanath, and then I guess we'll wrap it up.
Yes, you mentioned Prabhupada said 50% of what he wants to do is Varnashrama, but do you have a reference for that? Because I can never find that statement. And other devotees have been talking about it, and they can never give it a reference for it either. It'd just be nice to...
Okay, I'll have to research it. I mean, I've heard it dozens of times, but I can't remember if I ever saw it in print, but I'll try to find it on the database for you and get back to you. Okay, thank you very much. Gunjaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.